Well, it is a blessing to be here, and I will say I was not having any difficulties with a boyfriend back home. That part of the story was not mine. But yes, it's exciting to be here. We are excited to be here. It's a blessing. I can remember a couple of years ago being here and kind of sharing, and it's so exciting to be able to be here again and to share about what God has done and reflect back, not upon exactly what Rick said, not upon what we have done, but what God has accomplished in our midst and what God is, you know, using us for, you know, and that's just a huge gift. So September of 2013, we left for Africa. We left for Bundibugyo, Uganda. And in doing so, we left our community back here in America. And God has blessed us with a community of missionaries to work and work alongside of and to serve with. And it's exciting that we have a little video to show you to kind of get a glimpse about what our community is like, what our ministry is about, kind of little snapshots into the life of what we have there in Bundibugyo, Uganda. And so if it looks like it's getting ready, we'll watch this for a few minutes, then I'll come back and share a little bit more. I really like how that song ends. We're not going to study war no more. One of the interesting things about Bundibugyo, Uganda, there's been a lot of war. There's been a lot of preparation for war. There's been a lot of running and people scared into the bushes. There's been evacuations over the years. And so that song has significance. We're not going to study war no more. We're going to bring in the peace of the gospel. And that is important for us as missionaries to keep in the forefront, knowing that the people who we are seeking to share Christ with has been through a lot of difficult circumstances. And how can we then enter into their suffering, enter in with them to be able to share the hope of the gospel? And that is the key. We have a few slides that I was going to talk about and go over. Initially, to kind of share with you my family. You know, me, of course, I'm the bald one there. It's not baby Jack, but and then Lauren and Lucy, she's three. Olive, she's, Lucy, she's five. Olive, she's three. And baby Jack, he's about 6 weeks now. So we're able to come back to the States and deliver baby Jack and be able to really recuperate and to touch base with our supporters and touch base with our churches and touch base with many people who are praying with us and to continue to put out in front of everyone the vision of what we are doing, where the Lord has called us to, the people that we hold dear to our hearts, and how we can better be serving them, and what is the plan for what we're going to be doing. We are in Uganda, and if you're like me, didn't know where on the earth Uganda was, it's in East Africa, right next to Kenya, right next to the Democratic Republic of Congo. And the Lord has called us to here. And the Lord has called us to a particular village, I should say, in Uganda. It's really all the way over here in Bundibugyo, in the westernmost portion of the country. Bundibugyo, what does that mean? It means the end of the road. And that's exactly where we live, really at the end of the road. The road goes right up to the Democratic Republic of Congo. We're about 8 kilometers from the border, which is about 6 miles or so. So we're really, really close. If you know, the Congo is like this huge, big country right in the middle of Africa, where there's all sorts of fighting and rebel forces and things like that going on. And we tend to have a lot of that come over on our side, right over here, since we're so close. The other interesting thing that I'll show you about this map about where we lived, and it helps you understand, we've got the second highest mountain range in Africa. Looks like my pointer's not working anymore. But over here, the Rwenzori mountain range, it's about, you know, 16,000 feet at the highest, around 14,000 feet. So it really separates us from the rest of Uganda. It separates that because it's really at the end of the road. And what's interesting, it is like the forgotten district, the forgotten place of Uganda. There's not much help. There's not much relief. There's not much non-government organizations, NGOs. And so we are there serving, trying to share the gospel, but help out in other ways, in community health, in development, And so we'll talk more about that. Bunubuju first got on the world's radar in 2007 when there was an Ebola outbreak. A new strain of Ebola came and was doing what Ebola does, kill people and things like that. And so there's a new strain that was identified, the Bunubuju strain of Ebola virus. Luckily, in the last scare, we didn't have any issues with what was going on. But it's still an ever-present threat in this area. The health needs are great. Our team, like what Rick was talking about, when you're out there serving, your fellow missionaries become like your family. They become people who you rely upon. As what Rick said, they're the people you hold above the toilet when they're expelling their stomach contents and things of that sort. And so it really draws us into fellowship. It draws us in to rely upon each other. But as you must know, it causes a lot of friction because, we are sinful creatures. And so we have to deal with our sin, whether we're in ministry, whether we're missionaries or not. And so we have three families. We've got two couples. They don't have any children. We've got around six singles, and another family just joined, and another single couple is going to be coming. And so that is our family there. We are also reaching out into the community, and the local Ugandans are also becoming our family. We'll talk more about that also. But I want to give a quick overview of what we are doing in Bunubuju so you can understand how we are working, how we are serving, so you can see how the gospel is going forth in word but also in deed. When we go to Africa, we see so many things that we find out is a need. The community tells us, can you please help us with this? Can you please help us with that? Our children need medicine. And so when we go to just preach the gospel, we have to do it more than just with words but with our actions. And so that's kind of what I'm going to be painting the picture for you. One of the ministries that we have that is very vital is the Christ School Bunubuju. It is a secondary school, kind of like a high school, to be able to train up young people, not just in a good education, but also to train them up in the ways of the Bible, to be able to share with them the hope of the gospel. If we can transform the next generation that are going to be leaders in the community, we can really be able to influence the community as a whole. It was founded in 1999 through the missionaries. Like they said, the philosophy is to instill hope that people are not forgotten by God. We're starting to see some of the fruit of this investment in that the young people are going off to university and coming back and serving within their community, but serving in a different way than a lot of people. Serving with the hope of the gospel, serving because they are now Christians in an animistic culture. And so that is important, and that is what we are seeking to encourage. Books for Bundi. It's interesting that this was a desire of the missionary moms for a number of years. There is no library in Bunubuju. There's no library in Nahuka town, where we're a village in which we live just outside of Bunubuju town. And so to have children be able to come, like an after-school program, and sit down and see pictures and see books and have them read to them, and hear Bible verses and be memorizing them and things like that in their own language, but also in English, is really, really beneficial to be able to ground the young people, not just our youth or adolescent, but also our children. And so this has been something that just really has formulated since we've been there. And if you've been following any of our emails or newsletters or whatnot, we're always asking for more books, and we're also trying to get all those books to Africa. Which is also an interesting type of need in itself. But we see amazing things happening from here. Children are gathering in the afternoons. They're having, Bible verses and stories in their own language and things like that, as we have some interpreters reading to them and things like that. It's a place that Lauren really loves because she can take our children there. And we've got, children of all different races and colors and nationalities all together, learning together. And so it's really an amazing ministry. You kind of saw a little video of the sports ministry going on. They play football, which is like soccer. This is a good program that was started to build relationships with a lot of the at-risk youth in our community. And one of the interesting things is we are also doing this in conjunction with the local church. Deacons and elders and things of like that are coming out also to help disciple, to help in Bible stories, in devotions, after they play football and have a lot of good time. And I will say, they're kicking some butt. I mean, they're really getting really good. And so local other like pickup teams are challenging them, and local schools are challenging them, and they're winning. And so it's really encouraging for them and for us, because, you know, it's exciting. Women's ministry. In Bunabudjo, it's a very male-dominated culture. It's a very, very, there's not a whole lot of opportunities for women. A lot of times that they are forgotten. They do 80% of the work, and their life can be a bit difficult. And so we have two big things that are going on. Holly Wheeler is leading a Bible study at one of our local church plant congregations. It's interesting. They generally do it in about three different languages. So you can imagine going from English to two different African dialects. And it's just amazing to see these women that are hungry for studying the Word of God. Pat Abbott, one of our other missionaries, is doing a lot of crafts, teaching different type of crafts. You can see the quilt that they've been able to create. And it's giving women who do not have a spouse an occupation, a way that they can be able to learn a bit of a trade, sell their goods and things of that sort. And so it really helps out in a holistic way of sharing the gospel in conjunction with studying the Bible on a weekly basis. Bundi Water. Josh Dickinson, one of our water engineer on the team, his desire is to be able to serve through his technical skills. Where we are, you can't really like drill a well and just be able to get water underneath the ground. And so a lot of it has to do with a gravity water-fed system from a waterfall and piping it to different villages. And so this is a huge need. What's interesting, it's a bit of a challenge in that our community does not see the inherent value of clean water. Because in Bunabudjo, many people don't attribute sickness and disease to, oh, I just drank water that was contaminated. It isn't there. It is, who cursed me? And what kind of relationship is out of balance? You know, who did it? There isn't that relationship there. And so for our community health and development aspect of even just providing clean water, there is still a lot of education. There's still a disconnect. There's still an ability to try and be able to help see what is really going on and to be able to share the gospel this way. So in a way that is a bit challenging at times for Josh. Our children have teachers from the States who come over to help us to train our children. And so like Lucy and Olive and a number of our children that are there, six plus, and we just have four more arrive. So we were having about 10 to 12 children there. We have teachers from the States that come over and train our children and kind of do like a missionary school for them, which is a huge blessing. It's a huge blessing for us. We don't have to worry about like homeschooling our children or putting them in the public school, which is not quite like America. We have several teachers in the community, and they've got like 60 kids per classroom and everything like that. So it's just not a situation that we really want to put our children in. But what's interesting is they're sacrificing their time. They're using their skills as teachers here in the States to come and share with our children. So that is a huge big blessing for us as a team. A huge big need is pastoral training. Currently, right now, we do not have a pastor on our team. The way that the ministry has transpired in Bunabudjo is that there's been like three waves of missionaries coming since like the late 80s, early 90s to Bunabudjo. We've had church planters come and do evangelism, and churches have been planted in the local area. We see that the next wave of missionaries were to do community health and development through physicians. And then within the past 3 years, there's been the third wave, which is our family and the other families that you've seen. And so we're pretty new, and part of our missionary family is we don't have a pastor, and so we're looking for one. But we have had some short-term teams come and do pastoral discipleship and training, which is a huge need. As we talk to the pastors in the area, as we talk to our community leaders, that is one of our desires, and we're hoping to grow and expand. And so if you want to send Rick, that would be great. Or Travis, or any one of the leaders. We're trying to come and just reap from the harvest here to take over to Africa. It's a huge prayer request for us to be able to send pastors to work alongside of us and to be able to help out. Continue to be praying that the Lord would raise up pastors for us to help train our local pastors They're desiring to help, or they're desiring to help, they're desiring the need. It is a huge need, and that's what they keep on asking us. And a little bit more into the medical community development arm, in which I've been more working with, per se. As a physician assistant, after spending time in Belize, I felt the need to go back to school, coming back to the States, and go study as a physician assistant so I can be able to go back internationally and work as a medical missionary. I saw that the opportunity to be able to help somebody when they're sick really can open the door to share the gospel. And we even see that in our lives when we're like, I won't get into graphic details, but when we're sick and having a difficult time, our body is weak. Not only are we vulnerable spiritually, but we're also vulnerable in our body itself. And to be able to have someone come in with medicines or with the knowledge to be able to help out in that, and the compassion of Christ at that time, that is important. That is where I feel like the Lord is burdening my heart. So we were recruited to be able to work alongside of two physicians in the Nahuka Health Center. Particularly in the pediatric ward. We are in a partnership with the Nahuka Health Center as volunteers to bring medical care to patients, but also to help in educating hospital staff, just as those who came before us did. And so that was kind of the expectation when we left in 2013. And due to unfortunate circumstances, both of our physicians had to return back to the States, which left me as a sole medical provider in the health center. Now, the way that it works out is we are volunteers for the pediatric ward. So it's not like I'm having to do labor and delivery or adults or things like that, because that's where we focused in our efforts, is to be able to help the children who are suffering and to be able to share Christ to their parents and to them. And so that looked very interesting. Being in an African context is much different than serving in a hospital in America. It's challenging on many levels. After kind of, we had about 3 months of overlap between the physician who is returning back to the States to get married, our other physician returned back to the States for cancer treatment. And so I had a very brief trial by fire, understanding what the role in which I was asked to kind of fulfill being a physician assistant. And after being handed over these, I tried to go solo for a few months and found out I just couldn't hack it. I found out that basically it was overwhelming. And I'm going to kind of paint a picture of what I felt that was overwhelming at the time. And so let me share with you a little story. One day I was called out of a sickle cell club that I was doing by a nurse, Wilson. He's one of the pediatric nurses at the health center. He asked me to come over and help getting an IV started. Now, it was about with a child about 1 year old. That child was also part of our sickle cell club, so I'm like, okay, definitely we need to help out here. And what's interesting is children with sickle cell disease, and I'll talk more about this in one of our other slides, they have these crises in which they have complications when they get sick and dehydrated and things of that sort. And so, what we would need to do is start an IV, get fluids, get medicine. Wilson is one of our best guys at getting an IV started. So by him coming and asking me, I'm like, okay, you must really need some help. I don't even know if I can help you here. But what was interesting is after I got there, saw what was going on, he was asking me for help. It seemed serious, quickly assessing the child. I knew that we were going to have difficulty. He was very dehydrated, which makes it very difficult to get IV access. So got down, made a quick assessment, couldn't really feel anything, couldn't appreciate anything, so I did my best. In the midst of trying to do all this, having the parents around, Wilson, me, in the health center, the child stopped breathing. The child died. There was no means of even resuscitating the child. We don't have oxygen. We don't have power. We don't have running water in the health facility. Couldn't get any lines started. And that was it. The parents then took the child, started mourning, and took him home. That was one of the children that were enrolled in our sickle cell program. So not only did it affect me feeling completely inadequate, where they're called there to be a medical missionary to be able to help, and what are we doing? during my time there, I saw more children die than I felt like I was able to help them. So it's rather depressing. but it really takes a toll on us. And so we came to help, and I felt like we weren't doing such a good job. Meanwhile, being the sole provider there, there was a lot of overwhelming things I had to deal with in that regards. And so that kind of really easily led to burnout very quickly, not having anybody to consult with and things of that sort. So in light of that, I decided, how can I prolong my time? How can I do a good job? How can we be able to focus on doing the best bang for what we can be able to do with our resources, with our manpower, with our personnel? And so I decided to change to focusing more of my efforts on running and equipping the Sickle Cell Club ministry. And one of the things that was good about this is that it was more of a public health program rather than treating the acute medicine. The other side note is I was having a whole lot of difficulty with the district health officer in our area obtaining my license to really be able to practice medicine. And so we had to readjust and to shift. And that can be very depressing at times, because I felt like I was called there to help treat. I felt like I was called there to serve in that capacity. And to not do that was a bit difficult. So our Sickle Cell Club, what exactly is that? We focus on children with sickle cell disease. It is very prevalent in our area. One out of every five Ugandans are at risk for having a child with sickle cell disease, because it is an inherited genetic defect or disorder affecting the red blood cells. So when they're under stress or they get sick, the red blood cells shift and change shape, and they won't transport oxygen. They can get stuck and occluded, and then you can have a lot of organ damage. And so these kids tend to die early. 80% of the children with sickle cell disease in our area die before the age of five. So the 20% that does survive, they may only survive to about 10 years old. And it's interesting, sickle cell trait and disease is so prevalent in Uganda as a whole. And so how can we be able to tackle a genetic disorder? We can't change their genes or anything, but we can be able to help prevent, and we can educate the parents on when to bring them to the health center so that they don't end up as that child that I talked about dying just trying to put in an IV, trying to get them rehydrated, or to get them medicine to be able to prevent or to tackle the pneumonia that they had or whatever. And so the way that I focused is on health education to the parents. When to bring your children in, how to prevent diarrheal disease and things of that sort, using the skills that I felt like I was preparing in the States for, but also being an advocate, bringing awareness of it so that people are not saying, the term that they generally use with these children are called the walking dead, because they're not going to survive. So many of them die. So to be able to bring hope to those parents, to be one of their advocates. Also, we did a lot of handing out of preventable medications, such as antibiotics, to prevent pneumonias and things of that sort. Folic acid, which helps in the reproduction of red blood cells. And the other thing, which I was very excited about, was when I was here last time, I was talking to Rick about what is it going to be like when we go to Africa. And you know, of course, the church has been, as a whole, has been involved in Africa far longer than even we have been there. And so Rick was telling me about this Bible cloth that they had and telling me about how other missionaries are using it. And I said, that's fantastic. I can definitely use that and take that. I hadn't heard about that before coming here. And so you can go in the fellowship hall and see one of the Bible cloths is situated on the wall. And that's what I would take to the health center. We would take it, we would hold it up, and we would go through chronological the Bible stories. Now, one of the interesting things is the people in Bundibugyo, we would say that they are all animists, in which they fear spirits within the world that control things. And so the major issue that they are dealing with is they are out of control, or they have no control over the things in their life. If someone is sick, it is a spirit. If someone is sick, it is a curse upon them. And that is where the gospel can go into the culture and penetrate and talk about the truth of the gospel. Talk about the God who created the earth, who created them, created spirits, and that he has dominion over those spirits. over demons, over Satan, you know, and talk about creation. And so that, I think, was amazing. As soon as I brought out the Bible cloth, everybody was all excited and wanted to be able to see the pictures, because it's a very oral culture to be able to talk and to be able to share stories. That is what they're used to. And so I was very excited to be able to incorporate the Bible cloth into what we were doing in the Sickle Cell Club, to be able to talk about the hope of the gospel. I wasn't able to really incorporate it when I was rounding and seeing patients on a daily basis, you know. And so this was really a blessing. You can kind of see, this is the other thing I did was institute, like, you know, a chairman, a vice chairman, things like that, a group of leaders in our program. They were parents of the children with sickle cell disease, and giving and trying to train them up and teach them how to take over the program, like why we are here back in the States, which hadn't been done before. And so we can see here Tinka Jackson in the middle picture. He is the chair of it. And, you know, his daughter that he's in, like, the red shirt right there, she's his child that has sickle cell, or he's her, that's his kid. So in reassessing a lot of what is going on, what worked, what didn't work, how we can incorporate the gospel and things of that sort, we're still left with the issue of not having a physician on the ground that I can work with. As a physician assistant, that is, I mean, that's my title. and it makes it a lot more difficult to be able to volunteer and to do what we are doing there because of that. Last December, January, we were able to reassess and kind of come back to the States for a brief period to do some debrief. And the suggestion was that we would be able to get a little bit more training, a little bit more experience, and maybe even formalize an internship that will help me accomplish more and accomplish more of our goals in Bunabudgio. And so we came back to the States in the end of May, beginning of June, to be able to participate and to be able to enroll in a tropical medicine course in West Virginia University. Several missionary doctors I know went through that program. And it was fantastic. I mean, we had a number of doctors from, what is it, the U.S. Department of Defense, their tropical medicine program, from the CDC, the World Health, Doctors Without Borders, come and lecture and to be able to kind of fill in those gaps of some of the things that I was seeing. But I'm like, I have no clue what this child is going through right now. And, you know, when I was seeing patients, I'd like look everything up in a book and whatnot, because it's rather difficult. We don't see all that stuff here. We don't see malaria. We don't see dengue and typhoid and things like that here in the States. And so it was a great experience to be able to be there for about 2 months. The other, and then to come and have a baby and be able to come and share, was also amazing. And then, so January 5th, and many of you asked me, so when you guys go back, what is coming up next? So January 5th, we'll be getting on a plane and going back to Africa. Rather than going back to Uganda, we were going to be going back to Kenya for a 12-month internship. And what is interesting is our organization, Surge, is going to be partnering with Samaritan's Purse to be able to start a family practice residency program in Chigoria, Kenya, which is about 5 hours or so, 5.5 hours, just north of Nairobi, to be able to train Kenyan physicians in a family practice model, in which you don't really have many family practice residents or physicians in Kenya. And so it's going to be interesting. It's going to be very exciting for me to be a part of this family practice residency so that I can gain a better practice with Kenyan and American physicians, but also help to understand how they're incorporating education and medical models so that I can be able to then take that experience and bring it back to Bunabudgio. The exciting thing is we also just had a physician join our team, and he's going to be getting established there in Bunabudgio. So when I return after this 12-month internship, we'll be able to have a physician to work alongside of. And we are excited about that. We're excited that he has moved his family of all 4 children, all, I think, under 6 or 7 years old, to Bunabudgio, to the end of the road, to be able to work alongside us. So we're excited about that also. A few thoughts as I wrap up. Hopefully I'm not going too long. A few thoughts as I wrap up. what is missions really about? I kind of did a lot of like technical stuff about what are we doing per se. But missions is not about what we are doing. And we can easily get that flip-flopped. Missions is about building gospel-centered relationships. It is about sharing the love of Christ. It is about living in community, which I'm learning in Africa means living in community. Mr. Derek, I need some help. A lot of knocks at the door. A lot of going outside of our comfort zones. And building relationships with people to help us do that in a very culturally appropriate way. Because if not, I'd just be like a bull in the china shop, doing it my own American way. I'd be able to enter into the culture with the gospel. And isn't that the model that Christ has shown us? God became flesh, dwelt among us. And so I want to tell you, the guys yesterday who came to the men's breakfast, you heard about Yosef. That is him in the white hat over there. That is our little gardening angel. Yosef is a an elder in the church, Bunimalinga New Life. He became a believer under the missionaries, who the first church planting evangelism missionaries who were in Bunabugio. He's done evangelism himself, helped plant churches and things of that sort. And so he was a valuable resource. A friend that I didn't know of the first year that we were there. And so in my second term, I learned about Yosef, and I started talking to Yosef, and he started really helping me, and so he became my cultural and language helper. One of the first things he told me when I met with him was he said, "You know, Derek, you need to learn how to transport a dead body." I'm like, "What? I thought we were going to learn about like the ABCs or something, you know, of Lewisi." And he's like, "Missionaries have done it badly, poorly in the back. They want to put the dead body on the roof, and you don't do that. You put them inside." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." You know, and within a month, I was asked to be able to do that. And that's a great service you can do for local people. People that we know that are friends of the mission, to be able to help if someone dies in the hospital, be able to transport their body back to their house so they can be able to have a memorial for them. And, you know, little things that we wouldn't know as Americans. And that was really, really good. How to run our house, how to build relationships, who's really telling the truth and things like that when they're asking for help. And so he has been a vital friend of ours. And he's a normal person. I debated even sharing this. One of the first times meeting with Yosef, we were talking about his life and where he's from and things of that sort. And he told me, he's like, you know, Brother Derek, I'm 2 years sober. Most guys in our community do not talk about their sins. They do not share their feelings. They do not share what their struggles are. And to be able to have a friend like Yosef, in which we have open communication, we can talk about the gospel. We can talk about how it affects our life, on the root level, you know, with our humanity. This other gentleman over here, I like this picture. Makes me look huge. It's unlike standing next to Rick or Travis. Chris, we live on about 2 1/4 acres, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And so Chris has come asking for work and help and things of that sort. And so he's been a great guy to be able to get out and work with and be able to get to know him, get to know the culture through his eyes, and be able to work with him and be able to have a friend. And so I would say these are two friends that I can say that I have. And that is important. I can say there's not a whole lot of things that we've done good, but we've been able to build some relationships, and now we have some friends. And that's important. A few other people I wanted to talk to you about, and my wife will come up and talk about her friends. My friends, her friends. But Keza David, you know, not all friends is it always feeling like it is a two-way street. Keza, there's probably not one week that goes by that he's not at my door asking for work, asking for money, asking for food because they don't have any food in the house. Kiza is also the treasurer of the sickle cell department, or the sickle cell club that we have. Kiza has, I think, 3 or 4 children with sickle cell disease. Luckily, the little girl, his last born, does not have that sickle cell disease. She's probably carrying a sickle cell trait like he is, but she's not manifesting the symptoms. I forget the first one who has died, but actually just last month we got word that his second born, Lucky, has died from sickle cell. That is a relationship that we can share the gospel, but it is not an easy relationship there. It is not one that is very easy for me, because there's always requests that come along with it. But he is one that we can be able to share the gospel with, because he is hurting. And that is good. Just wrapping up very quickly. Another local pastor, Shem and his wife Grace. Grace has been dealing with a number of health issues they can't find out what's going on. Her female organs are having some issues and whatnot, as they say, and she's been sick. And so that is one of the relationships that my wife has been reaching out to them, trying to share the gospel, trying to help them. And of course, in a very male-dominated culture, you know, I have a better relationship with Shem than with Grace, and he's a local pastor that we are trying to seek to encourage. How has Christ been using us? He has been breaking. He has been allowing us to endure our own trials, our own areas of suffering, in which to be able to build relationships. Right over here, you can see last summer we found out we were pregnant, and we were very excited about that. We were expecting our third. But yet, come fall, the same month of our 10-year anniversary, we found out that we were having a miscarriage. And that was it was a trial for us. It was a trial for our marriage. It was a trial for our relationship, asking God, what is going on here? But what was interesting is when we came back from Kampala, came back over this very difficult time of going through this miscarriage, the Lord opened up the opportunity for our community to come and speak words of encouragement to us. It was not us trying to be able to share the gospel and do like the typical missionary stuff, but it was our community coming around, because everybody in our community has lost a child. The death and mortality rate of kids is just astronomical. But yet, they knew the pain and the suffering that comes with losing a child. And so they were able to gather around us during our memorial and be able to do that. And we're like, God, we didn't see this. Taking something that is ultimately a tragedy, and using it to be able to share the gospel and have a foundation with our, and build that relationship, that gospel-centered relationship with our community, which is certainly not what we would have expected. And just to close, we appreciate the prayers. We appreciate the support of Calvary Chapel Mesquite. We appreciate you all writing letters and things of that sort. It's an encouragement to us. It's an encouragement so far as we've been here sharing, and people are coming up and talking about their stories and just encouraging us, and I appreciate that. It is the gospel at work in our hearts. There's nobody better, higher, whatever. It's not that we are so spiritual people to be in Bunabudjo. It is not that. We are normal people allowing the Lord to use and work, and work through us. And half the time we're like oblivious to the fact, because the Lord works in natural ways through relationships and the gospel. And so I appreciate that. So I guess we'll close in prayer.